Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. The only group one radical county leader hates more than cops? Jews. That is what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
We told you yesterday about Tamer Abuzit. He is the anti-police activist, a socialist, who runs King County's Office of Law Enforcement Oversight, OLEO. This is an organization that investigates and provides oversight for deputies, King County Sheriff's deputies. We went through yesterday rather extensively a lot of tweets in which he bashes cops, bashes the system, says he wants to see it dismantled, abolished, supports the defund movement. This is a guy who very clearly, when it comes to cops, he can't be objective. There's a meeting that's happening right now. I think it's still happening right now at the King County Council, specifically about his conduct on Twitter, because it left a lot of folks, including folks on the left, pretty ticked off because of the damage that he has done to this department. Turns out his hatred of cops, in a lot of ways, pales in comparison to his hatred of Jews and the state of Israel. So much so that the Consulate General of Israel to the Pacific Northwest and the American Jewish Committee of Seattle, they're now asking the King County Council to reconsider this guy's future. His disdain is rather remarkable. He's a critic of Israel's very existence. He amplifies anti-Semitic viewpoints and propaganda. But it wasn't just about his tweets, and we'll get into that in a second. I tracked down a letter to the editor from August of 2001 in the Chicago Tribune that had his name on it. He's from Chicago, or he lived in Chicago at the time. This letter was titled, "Not Terrorists." Any ideas where I might be going with this? Because he's not talking about the Jews. No, he defended actual terrorists, Hamas. He writes, "In Israel / Palestine," which there's no such thing as Palestine, "the Palestinians who die for their cause are called terrorists. The only reason they're called so is because their attacks are not planned by a government. The Israeli army has killed more people, used heavier weapons and artillery, and left hundreds homeless, all following the commands of one man, Ariel Sharon. How then could the Palestinians who die, proving a point that could only be proven this way, be called terrorists? It is unfair." Palestinians can only prove their point by indiscriminately firing rockets into Israel and killing innocent Jewish civilians. It's the only way they can do it. Why would we call them terrorists? You see, when Israel defends itself against attacks, defends, isn't proactive, but when they defend themselves by attacks, against attacks by Palestinian terrorists, they are called aggressors or oppressors. They're called that by anti-Semites. This has been a go-to strategy for anyone who is in the anti-Semitic crowd to denigrate Israel and Jews. When Israeli forces kill Palestinian terrorists, you've got folks who claim that the terrorists are the actual victims. Terrorists who want to, and they openly say this, see the destruction of Israel. They're apparently the victims. And of course, Abuzit helps to amplify that message. Now, he's taken down his Twitter, or he put it on private, although not before I screenshot most of the offending tweets. In early January of this year, and I say that intentionally because I don't want you to think we're going back decades. No, a few months ago, he retweeted an anti-Semitic smear with a tweet by a guy named Ala Daragmi, who is a journalist who has been called out many, many, many times for his anti-Semitism. And in this tweet, he claimed that Israeli troops killed a 16-year-old named Amr Abu Zeitan. And he's citing the Palestinian health minister with this information. And he included in this tweet a photo of this guy. 16 years old. He's in a park. He looks innocent. He's smiling. And of course, we're supposed to look at that and say, those evil Jews, they killed this kid for no reason. In fact, the message that was in that tweet said, the Israeli military has already killed 3 Palestinian children this year. This year is 5 days old. Oh, no. Except he wasn't an innocent 16-year-old Palestinian. He was shot at. He was someone who shot at Israeli troops. And he did it, according to reports, at close range. He did it as Israeli troops were trying to arrest 2 terror suspects. They returned fire, and they ended up killing this boy. Would they have preferred not to do that? Of course. But I have a general rule. We should all accept that if you shoot at someone, especially when they're in law enforcement, they're going to shoot back. Now, Abu Zeid retweeted this false claim by Muhammad Shahada, who is a known propagandist. And he tweeted that Israeli forces murdered a father for defending his son. And this is what he claimed, quote, they shot him in the chest and at gunpoint. I'm assuming that meant close range. Wow. They just murdered this father for defending his son. That seems odd. That doesn't sound right. I mean, something had to have happened. There has to be some context. And then he goes on to say that the father who was shot was refused medical aid by the Israeli troops. It's a lie. In this case, there's literal video of a lot of it. Israeli troops were trying to arrest that guy's son, who's a suspected terrorist. And as they were doing that, there were people on rooftops throwing rocks and cement blocks at the troops. The father was allegedly one of them. And after he was shot, you can quite literally see video of the troops trying to provide him medical aid. There's a lot of these kinds of videos or tweets. There was one, speaking of video, there was one in which Abu Zeid retweets a video, but it was a screenshot that someone else had posted. And you can't tell from the screenshot that it's a video. It just looks like a photo of a march that took place. And it was a march at the University of Michigan. And the guy whom he retweeted said that, oh my God. He said that this was merely a march for freedom. And that people are smearing these freedom fighters effectively. So I went and I found the original tweet that was screenshot. And that's how I found out it was a video. And I watched the video. Do you know what I saw on this video?
What did you see?
It was a march. That part's true.
Okay.
That part's true. They were calling for an intifada, which is a violent uprising. And they were calling an intifada against Israel. And what was oddly missing from the screenshot was a woman, part of the marching group, with a sign. And the sign said, there's only one solution, which is a not so subtle reference to the final solution as popularized by that guy named Hitler, who also was not a fan of the Jews. This is absurd. And yet he's able to get away with this. He calls repeatedly the state of Israel an occupation, that it's genocidal, that it engages in ethnic cleansing. One of his tweets, when another intifada begins, don't come at me with your bull. Calls for peace and your sudden found care for civilians. You give zero bleeps about Palestinian civilians being murdered and displaced. You know, ethnic cleansing. There was a video that went up from the official account for the State of Israel. And it was a video celebrating the 75th anniversary of its independence. And it was like a promotional video, effectively. That's the best way I can describe it. Abu Zeid retweets that and says he can't see it through the blood on the lens. This is a bad person. this is a hateful person. And usually we hear from folks who say, why is it that you can't criticize anything from Israel without being called an anti-Semite? We hear that a lot. As a Jew, I hear that a lot. Because I am very quick to label anti-Semites when they're out there. I think it's important to do that. Criticizing Israeli policy, government policy, totally okay. We might disagree about interpretation of this policy or whether or not it's wise, but it's no different than debating a bill that's being discussed at the congressional level or in Olympia. That's totally okay. However, if the only policies you criticize are the ones that allow a country to defend itself from terrorists, the ones who openly call for Israel to be wiped off the face of the planet, when the only policy criticisms that you offer ignores or justifies Palestinian violence, when your whole point is to say that the government should not exist because Israel should not exist, you're an anti-Semite. That makes you an anti-Semite. The people who often say, oh, we're just disagreeing with the policy. What's the policy? Defending itself? Seriously, what policy are you referring to? Your very existence. Oh, okay. Thanks for clarifying. Now, he accuses Israel of apartheid, of genocide, which is a clear form of anti-Semitism as defined by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. This is a widely accepted definition, except here in King County. We'll get into that in a second. But when you accuse Israel of apartheid or genocide, the definition, and by the way, the European Commission, rightly call it anti-Semitic because it's a claim that, quote, the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor. When you hold those positions and you forward those positions, that is a form of anti-Semitism. And it's made to gin up claims of abuse and a grievance so that you can gin up some hatred towards the Jews. That's the only reason why someone does that. Now, it's interesting because this comes in the context of a month ago. And I remember we covered the story that the King County Council put out a proclamation against anti-Semitism. And I didn't think it was necessary because the definition that they chose to use was a watered-down version of the official definition. I don't need the virtue signaling. I just don't need that. But if you're going to virtue signal, at some point you might be called on to actually back up your position. That's the dangers with virtue signaling. The folks who said, we are a sanctuary city for illegal immigrants. Come to us. We will protect you against those evil Republicans. Whole bunch showed up to Denver, to Chicago, to New York, to Martha's Vineyard. And all of a sudden, they're like, whoa, this is not fair. Oh, you got called on your virtue signal. Okay, King County Council, y'all passed unanimously. You passed a proclamation condemning anti-Semitism. You've got a county leader, a director, with a lot of power and influence, who is very clearly an anti-Semite by the very definition that you posed, which was still watered down, but you put it out there. What are you going to do? Ball's in your court. This is not someone who can say that this was misinterpreted. No, I dare anyone. I defy anyone to look at these tweets, look at the messages, look at what he believes, read his words, and tell me this isn't just hatred. Tell me it's not hatred. You can't. No one can. I know he would say that. And I reached out to him again, asking for comment. He's a coward. He said nothing. No response. You got the King County Council meeting as we speak about what to do with this guy. What should happen? He should not be in the position that he's in. Imagine for a moment, you already know he hates cops. What if you're a deputy who's Jewish and he's investigating you? Oh my God. Imagine how he would be treated or she would be treated. Imagine that for a second. God forbid we had an Israeli American. Oh, there's no way in the world that investigation is going to clear you. Might accuse you of being a genocidal cop. They committed genocide in Israel, and they commit genocide in federal way. That's the kind of treatment that I would expect from someone like this. Now, I've got all of these tweets and a statement by the Consulate General of Israel. I've got a statement online right now at KTTH.com. I've got all the tweets online right now at KTTH.com. And let's be clear about something. Whether it goes to yesterday's story about all the anti-police tweets or today's story about the anti-Semitism, know that not a single media outlet, not a single one, has covered this story, including the ones surrounding me. Not a single one has covered this story. Ask yourself why. Ask yourself if he tweeted out in the same kind of language with the same kind of messaging his disdain for progressive activists or Black Lives Matter. Imagine if he did that. Imagine if he called the Black Lives Matter activists out the same way he calls cops out. Imagine if instead of going after Israel, he went after the invisible Palestine. Imagine if he went after Palestinians. Imagine that for a second. What would the response be? Would this be a story? Would other outlets cover this? Would Cairo and Como and King and Fox 13, would they cover this story? Would the Seattle Times be on it? Would the Bellevue Reporter be on it? This would get picked up by the Tacoma News Tribune. It's not even in their county. The Everett Herald would be all over this, not even related to them. Everyone would be on this. But this is a guy who's going up against cops. This is a guy who's going up against Jews. And this is a guy who comes from a quote-unquote marginalized community, which one would say that about Jews, but we don't anymore because of the anti-Semitism and the progressive movement. This should be a big story. You've got council members on both sides of the aisle calling this out as inappropriate. You have them meeting to discuss his future. No one has covered this yet. And that means it's on all of us to get eyeballs on this story. Because the only way we're going to get any kind of movement here, and maybe you disagree, but I don't think this guy should be in charge of investigating cops. I feel uncomfortable about employing a anti-Semite, but he gets to be an anti-Semite. That's his right. I get to call it out. That's my right. But when you hate cops and you're in charge of investigating them, that's a problem for me. It should be a problem for you. So I'm hoping that you're going to do me a favor and tweet out the link to this story. Post it on your Facebook account. Post it on your LinkedIn account. Post it on your Getter and Truth Social account. You've got to get the story out there. More people have to know about it, so they put pressure on a council that could very easily, with the exception of Reagan Dunn, could very easily just say, oh, we're not going to get involved because this story is not getting too much traction. Now, the good news is it is getting a lot of traction with King County Sheriff's deputies, like a ton. They continue to reach out, saying that this caused a lot of problems because they had no idea that this was going on. And they're going to put a lot of pressure, including the sheriff is going to put pressure on the council and the executive to do something. But we need public pressure. And unfortunately, if the media is not going to help out on this, I can't do it alone. So I need you to either go to KTTH.com, click on the story and share it. There are two stories. Share them both. Or just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll go ahead and send you a link to my blog so that you can read it yourself, go through all the tweets, and then share it. So please text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and let's get some eyeballs on this story. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the road?
I suppose this is a PSA that works in two ways. For those of you who either live in King County or will be driving through King County on the freeway, know that Washington State Troopers, oh no, it's not only just King County, but it's the logs, you'll get it. Washington State Troopers are doing a sort of an emphasis patrol on a new law that not a single person listening to me has ever heard of. I barely remember that this is law, which is the move over or slow down law. That's how it's being described. Now, under this law, if you are driving, you either have to move over a lane or you have to reduce your speed by 10 miles per hour when you are driving near and by and past either an emergency vehicle that has its lights on or while it's stopped on the side of the road. They're doing this out of safety. Last year, 113 Washington State Patrol vehicles were hit while they were at a traffic stop or a crash scene. And as a result, a whole bunch of troopers ended up getting injured. Some were pretty serious. And so this patrol is happening right now through Friday. Now, I say the patrol is happening in King County. The law is for everybody. So everyone should be aware of that. Did you remember that? I had no clue. Now, part of me says, at least for me, it's not necessary to be a law because I feel like most of us already slow down.
Yeah.
And the people who don't. Because you're going to say, well, Jason, there were 160 or whatever, then 113 incidents. Yeah, I don't think those people are going to stop. They're just irresponsible drivers. They're irresponsible drivers no matter what. I'm not mad that they passed the law. Fine, I guess. But I don't know if it's all that necessary. The people who are going to – I just feel like we're already either responsible or we're not. And a new law, certainly one that no one's ever heard of, is going to change anyone's – driving habits, which in a lot of ways is driven by the conditions on the road, but also whether or not you're in a hurry. That's the truth. That's the unfortunate reality. When you're in a hurry, you're willing to say, I'm not really going to follow the speed limit. I'm not going to follow blah, 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 blah. I'm going to get into the carpool lane. I'm going to cross the double lines. I'm going to do all that. That's just how people drive. But of course, we support being safe. I do.
Well, it's just a common sense thing, right? One would think.
I don't even know that the context of 100. Obviously, I want the number to be zero, but is 113 a lot? I don't know the context.
It doesn't seem like a tremendous amount. Obviously, yeah, we don't want any, but that doesn't sound overwhelming.
Yeah. And by the way, most of these are not troopers pulling people over because they just keep driving away. They just keep driving. Thanks, Democrats. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, coming up, 4:45, you pick the news. Two stories for you to pick. Chris Vance has no clue what he's talking about in a new editorial. Would you like me to make fun of it? Or, I kind of just love this title, Inbreeding Within Southern Resident Killer Whale Adds to Extinction Threat. Which story do you want me to cover? Vance or the whale? And make sure you say Vance or whale. Text 1-800-465-8770.
Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Look at that. Look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They are online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead we focus on all of the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Burien because community leaders there and law enforcement there, they're saying, hey, King County, can y'all step up and help with the homelessness situation here? They are experiencing what so many other cities are experiencing, from Olympia, Puyallup, all the way into Bellingham, over into Spokane. They've got a park that has become completely overrun by the homeless. 14 tents line Burien's Town Square Park. It's between the Burien Library and the City Hall. There are about 30 people living there, according to Como TV, but they are not moving even after being offered some services. They're all like, nah, I want to go. Discover Burien Executive Director Deborah George spoke with Como. Says, yeah, this is causing a whole lot of problems for us.
We have fires, we have a lot of drug activity, a lot of loudness.
Now, I'm told cops are called there daily. And by I'm told, I mean I read it in the story. Sometimes multiple calls to this park a day. The mayor of Burien, Sophia Aragon, she says the city is trying to find placement for these folks, but it's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to do.
The city has done its best to do some outreach to find some alternative placements to get them indoors, but it's been really difficult.
Now, there are beds. The thing is, they're just not in Burien. The beds are out there. But Burien only has a site for severe weather issues that they implement. I'm not entirely sure why they can't do it right now with these homeless. But again, at the end of the day, they're just saying no. That's the problem. Right now, all of these people, if they said yes, you can find them a home or a room or a bed or a whatever, fill in the blank. They're out there. They exist. You're just going to have to drive them there. In Bellevue, that's what they used to. I think they still do it. They were like, hey, we found you a shelter bed. It's 4 miles away. It's out in Federal Way, whatever it is. We'll drive you there. And they put them in the car, drive them to the location, disinfect afterwards, and then they're done. That's what Burien has to do. That's what they're going to have to do. Because right now, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority kind of sounds like they're just blowing it off. That they're not really going to handle this. And again, they don't really handle anything. They want $12 billion, but they don't actually want to get the job done. Meanwhile, speaking of Bellevue, Bellevue and some of the surrounding areas right now, you know, we're talking about East King County. They are dealing with a very cooling housing market. Yes, it's happening across Washington State. The housing market is cooling. But in Bellevue and Redmond, they haven't really been experiencing that of late because what was going on? Amazon sending thousands and thousands and thousands of workers into downtown Bellevue. Well, some of that plan is on hold. On top of that, you've got now 27,000 Amazon employees being terminated. Obviously, they're not all from the area, but that's going to send a message to the people here. And when you have an economy that is slowing down and has slowed down, when you're in an industry that is going through sort of a course correction as it relates to the amount of spending they've done on jobs, committed to on jobs, it's going to change people's habits. The Northwest Multiple Listing Service, the NMLS, they say both the number of listings and the people willing to pay for homes under the mortgage rates are down. Because mortgage rates, 6 to 7%, they're all like, I'm not going to sign into that. What are you, nuts? I can't. Why would I do that? We just had rates like 2%, 3%, 4%. I'm not going to go into 6, 7%. That's too much. And again, it's happening mostly in this region because of the tech sector. Dan Edwards is the managing broker over at the Eastside Real Estate team. He spoke with King 5 to say, look, instability in the job market, it's going to impact housing.
Anytime there's uncertainty right in your job, as a buyer, you're going to pull back. I got a phone call from somebody that was looking to get after buying their home. They're like, okay, we're ready for our permanent home. And about 2 weeks later, they said, hey, there's a reorg right now, so we're going to hold off.
Yeah, I get that. I wouldn't want to do that then either. I would normally say it would sound like right now could be a buyer's market, right? If you've got cash, you can make the argument it's a buyer's market.
You can take advantage, yeah.
Problem, though. Because because the value of the homes is also starting to drop. There was a time where it was actually going up and then it was like, no, it's starting to come down. And it's been going down for the last few months. You've got people like our friend here, Mary, and by friend, I mean just some woman that they spoke to at King 5, who basically seems to be withholding the sale of her home until the values go back up.
We were watching it go up and up and up and up and up and up. And of course, the house value. And then, of course, we decided to take advantage of it. And it went, it just started coming down. Yes.
So she's not, and then she turns to the husband. Shut up, I got this. You don't talk, I talk. Go back upstairs, get out of my face. You screwed us up. You're the reason why we didn't sell the house 2 years earlier. So, I mean, in my head, that's what happened. You don't know it didn't happen. Why are you giving me that look? You don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think you might be onto something.
I'm 100%. I'm always right. I'm a talk show host. Again, that part makes sense. I just don't know how long you wait. It is tricky, right? It's just like when you have stock and you don't know quite when to sell. It continues to go up. And you're like, I'm going to wait for a bit. Then it comes down a little bit, but you're like, I mean, it just exploded 90%. Of course, it can come down a little bit, but it's going to continue to go back up. Then it goes down again. And you're like, okay, it's fine, whatever. Then it goes down again. And then you're like, Do I sell now? It sucks because I just had a bigger profit. If I sold then, it would have been fine. But if I sell right now, is it going to go back up tomorrow or next week, next month? And it keeps going down and down and down. And then by the time you decide to make your sale, there's nothing left. And for these homeowners, they're saying, why would I get rid of my house now, when they're betting that within a year, hopefully sooner, the value goes back up? I don't know. I do know that I've gotten a lot of cash. I do want to take advantage of this market.
You going to buy a house?
It would be an investment property.
Huh?
I don't want to live here. Get stuck in a Seattle home.
Well, you could live on the east side. It's nicer over
there. I don't want to drive. I don't want to get a car yet.
Well, light rail, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
That'll happen. I'll be dead. The first time a train successfully goes across I-90 and doesn't tip over like the first 30 will, which is my guess, I will be on my deathbed. And I just pray to God. The last thing I don't hear is, oh, it finally worked. It was a success. I hope those aren't the last words I hear. Finally, Steve Avila is the president of Overhead Door Company. It's based out of Bellingham. He spoke with Fox 13 and said, hey, thieves keep breaking into my business. In fact, just in the last week, it's happened twice. And unfortunately, they did at least $60,000 in damage by breaking into 6 trucks, stealing the tools inside, very expensive tools. And it happened despite the fact that he says, look, we put razor wire and fencing around the property, but there's a part of the property where a creek runs through, and that's how they got into this facility. And it kind of reminded me of all those robberies. Those were in homes, but they said that the police said they're basically going through like wooded areas or trails, creeks. I wonder if they're connected, because they said it was happening between Kent, and I think it went all the way down to Bellingham, didn't it?
I believe, yeah, Bellingham was.
I wonder if it's the same people. It fits the MO.
The first time they did it, they grabbed the easy stuff, and then they came back with real tools to dig into here. So I had already replaced a bunch of tools. They came back, stole the new ones and the old ones, right? It's just insane.
There's something ironic about using tools to then steal tools, right?
It's resourceful.
Like, is it, though?
Well, it keeps the line going. You never
run out
of tools.
It's just full circle.
Yeah.
So he bought the business back in 2020, and unfortunately, since then, what has happened? Crime has soared.
And after the pandemic, the shutdowns, the inflation, the supply chain issues, I mean, this company was just starting to get back on track, and now, you know, you guys can't go out and produce if they don't have their tools.
And it's not just his business. Jeff is a restoration worker. He says his personal truck was broken into and his tools were stolen. He had them locked inside of a toolbox. It was secured, but they stole it. That's what's going on here. Unfortunately, Steve and like so many other businesses that have been impacted by the crime, they end up putting money into different tools to prevent this from happening again. This guy installed outdoor security cameras. He got lucky in that a local company is helping him fence off that back portion where the creek was going through. Too bad they didn't say something a little bit earlier and said, hey, you've got a little bit of a vulnerability. But it's not their fault. So he's addressing it, but that costs money. And it's already expensive doing business here, whether it's Bellingham or Bellevue, whether it's Tacoma or Spokane. Like, it's already business is just difficult. It's difficult to get by. It's difficult to operate. It's difficult to afford. And then only you get hit with something like this at some point. You know, he's kind of ready to move on, maybe.
If businesses will work together like that and come together with their employees and start helping the community, then now you have all these forces coming to help the city from the bottom up.
Yeah, maybe the city should be doing more. When we come back, you get to pick the news. We did the first round of voting. Some people are very mean, because I did not do this on purpose. We have a story about Chris Vance and a whale. Don't look at me. I didn't do that on purpose. Story number one, I'll just mock a Chris Vance editorial that explains he doesn't know what he's talking about and is most definitely not a Republican. Or, I do like this one, inbreeding within southern resident killer whale adds to extinction threat. 1-800-465-8770.
Wood Pharmaceuticals.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rance Show.
Indeed you do. I'm not going to pretend to not be confused by some of the votes because I can't tell if they mean the whale or Chris Vance. And I'm not saying that. You mean people are saying that. I believe the whale story won by about one vote, but it was so close that I do promise we will get into the Chris Vance story at some point either today or tomorrow. This story comes to us from Fox 13, and I preface this by saying I have zero interest in southern resident orcas. None. The killer whale, I don't care. I do not care. I don't want animals to go extinct. I don't care. It's a weird sort of almost conflicting feeling to have. On the one hand, I don't want it to happen. On the other hand, if it did, okay.
Didn't we have those lawyers for the whales on a couple months ago?
Yeah, don't care about them either. I want them to go away. So this is the title of the story. Inbreeding within southern resident killer whale adds to extinction threat. Is it just lack of options is my guess? Right?
I guess so, yeah.
When we're talking about the extinction of a species, it's because you're not procreating. You're not populating with more resident orcas. And if they're all dying off, well, there's fewer mates. Like, that's just jumping on Tinder, and there's just two profiles. And so they swiped left twice because they're like, my God, that's my sister. And then the third one is the sister again. I'm like, okay. Well, in whales, not humans.
They have whale Tinder?
Yeah.
Huh.
You've not seen it?
You learn? No. Well.
It is. Let me tell you something.
I've seen whales. Tinder.
If you want just a date, you go on the whale Tinder. If you want to. That's a hookup site. My God. They say a new report just published in Nature, Ecology, and Evolution finds that inbreeding within critically endangered southern resident killer whale population is straining the population. The concern for the iconic orcas is not new, though the latest scientific findings add yet another concerning layer for those hoping to see the southern residents avoid extinction. Only 73 individual southern residents remain, and researchers in this new paper indicate that it might not be possible to reverse the trends that have already taken root. The author notes, while many killer whale populations are struggling, most have benefited from conservation efforts over the past 50 years. But it's long known that southern residents face an uphill battle. Their primary food source is also an endangered species, and vessel noise from ships in their preferred hunting grounds have made it increasingly hard to hunt. Pollution is also considered a third factor. Blah, 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 blah. Let's get to the good stuff. This new report adds a layer that could indicate why other populations have done a better job overcoming similar circumstances. They write, for instance, Biggs killer whales, also known as transients, oh my God, have exploded despite swimming the same waters as southern residents. None of this means that conservation efforts are a lost cause. In the group's conclusion, they write, quote, our results suggest that the southern resident killer whale population growth rate would be substantially higher if its average level of inbreeding was similar to other North Pacific killer whale populations. Why can't we just get rid of all the inbreeding? Why does it have to be similar to? Why can't it just be zero?
I'm not a whale expert. I don't know.
Well, apparently whoever wrote this isn't either because they're not giving me any of the interesting good parts. The hypothesis comes from looking not only at southern residents, but orcas from a variety of populations. What they found in comparing the genetics of the various species is that southern residents were unique in the lack of genetic variation. So in other words, the amount of inbreeding within the population was much higher. So what they don't say in this story, is that recent what they're looking at as far as the genetic makeup, or has that always been the case? Like, have they always been just a higher whale species of inbreeding, but before it was just less of an issue because they weren't going extinct? Like, are they just naturally higher in that than some of the others? Or, as I said at the beginning, which seems like a really good hypothesis, which is at some point there's no one else to mate with and there's probably this feeling of necessity to procreate because they know that there's not enough of them.
Yeah, I think your conclusion makes sense.
And I'm not even a scientist. But put that down on my resume. Let's just say I'm a
whale scientist.
Yeah, but that's the name of it.
Whaleontologist?
No, I like just whale scientist.
Okay.
It just tells you what it is. You don't have to wonder.
Yeah, you don't have to.
You don't have to see like a doctor and you're like, wait, what is that of? Of flowers? Of a very specific kind of flower? Why just call it a flower scientist? It's weird. A podiatrist. What do they look at? Feet? You always have to do the thing like, is it feet?
Is it feet or ears?
It's feet.
What's ears?
Is that an oral therapist? No, that's nose.
No, I thought ear. Who knows?
You know what you have at your disposal? I'm just going to throw this out there as an idea. I'm not even going to say that you should do it. You've got the entire world information a finger stroke away. And I don't even know what the heck it is for an ear doctor. Isn't it just ear, nose, and throat? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah.
It's not just an ear doctor.
Oh, man, I can't even say it. Otologist? That's what I'm seeing.
Otologist?
Yeah.
Is it not oral pharyngologist?
There's a couple long words. And then there was one Google search that just told me how to pronounce the word doctor. And that made me feel really smart.
Which is funny because the word you need to learn how to pronounce is the name of the doctor. I don't know. I just see ear, nose, and throat specialist. It's otolaryngology. Yeah, I was right.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay, so I was right. I just said it incorrectly, but I was right.
You said a little.
Yeah, well, what did you not? You couldn't pick it up?
No.
I was close. Otolaryngology. I was right. I wonder if any of them are all like, you know what? I like the ears more. I don't like the throat because everyone in the breath. And like, do you discriminate against patients? Like, doctor, it's an emergency. Come on in. I've got an opening. Thank you. My throat is bothering me. Well, I thought it was an ear thing. You better stay home. Get out of my face. 1-800-465-8770 for your text.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around,